If not for the pandemic, a bold decision by his employer, and a moment of pure happenstance, Marko Dordovic would be somewhere warm, drinking something cool, and almost sleeping with someone sexy. But the idea of suntans and romance was over. The job he had accepted, in favor of a lifetime of relaxation and indulgence, was as straightforward in its execution as it was complex. A few hours ago, after opening the encrypted mail, downloading the kill packet, and studying his targets, Marko read the job description, sat there in disbelief for a very long moment, then emailed his employer with one question: "When do I leave for San Francisco?" His employer's reply was nearly instantaneous. They were already fueling a jet. Just after sunset at the Cyril E. King Airport in the Virgin Islands, Marko boarded the private Gulfstream 500, settled into his seat, and tried to catch his breath. As the pilot waited on the runway for takeoff clearance, Marko sipped from a $2,500 bottle of 1995 Krug Clos d'Ambonnet Pinot Noir. He was going to miss this life. Maybe this was why the champagne tasted so good. He took another sip and closed his eyes, savoring the varying fragrances of the champagne: caramel spice, brioche, and sweet pastry cream. A long, satisfied sigh escaped him. He then took a deep, stabilizing breath, opened his eyes, and smiled. Marko Dordovic was not a man who smiled often. As he thought of the tasks ahead, as he stopped to consider the hell that would come as a result of his actions, his mood began to dampen, to darken, to intensify. "In 2 months," he thought, "I could very well be drinking my piss." The 41-year-old assassin recently achieved a level of wealth he had never dreamed possible in years prior. He should have enjoyed this life more. The Serbian national was worth seven figures with nearly 100% liquidity. For some inexplicable reason, however, Marko had been wondering if he had peaked too early. Now back to work on the very last job he'd ever do, he was reminded of how much he had missed the game, and how much he'd missed again when billions of people were dead. The Gulfstream finally taxied down the airport runway, turned around, then attacked the runway at full throttle. The jet lifted into the night sky like a dream. When they reached cruising altitude of 40,000 feet, the pilot indicated so with a brief announcement. Marko glanced out the oval window at the night sky. Soon the stars would twinkle with a cool brilliance. Would he even care? The immediate answer was probably not. He took another sip of his champagne, then he discreetly studied the flight attendant. She had a pleasant look about her, attractive features, and a runway model's body. He scanned her figure, looking for the kind of bulge that might imply a gun, a knife, or some sort of blunt force weaponry. Her body revealed nothing untoward. Still, one could never be too careful. For a moment, he wondered how long she would survive after he did what he did. Would she last days, weeks, months? How hard would she cling to what remained of her life? Would she prostitute herself for a hot meal and a roof over her head? In the end, everyone he'd ever killed had tried to make that sad, desperate bargain. When faced with the prospect of one's death, it was incredible how badly people wanted to live. Would he make the same sort of bargain with someone else? Would it eventually come to that for a man like him? He told himself he would not be that guy. But with worse days to come, infinitely worse days, the assassin would have to live lean, move fast, and kill even more efficiently than normal. He opened his laptop, keyed in a question to his employer: "Is this meant to be a third-world takedown?" He awaited his employer's reply. The answer was prompt: "This is a first-world takedown." He closed the laptop, sat back in his seat, and contemplated the scale of this operation. "When the first world falls," he thought, "the third world dies." At first, a cold chill swept through him, but then he felt suffused with sudden radiating heat. The idea that hundreds of millions of Americans were going to starve to death or butcher each other in the streets, that the godless heathens and scumbags were going to rape and pillage until nothing was left but blood, broken bones, and fields of ash, brought a charismatic smile to his face. Tempering the nearly orgasmic thrill he felt in thinking how the death of America would pitch the world into chaos, he went through his mental to-do list. Step A was to say yes to mass murder. "Check that box," he muttered. Step B was to board this plane and head to America. Check that box as well.